watching The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates. You're listening to A Pirate's Life for Me on The Sports Objective. Join us every Friday at noon as we catch up with a member of Pirate Nation. Here's your host, Bubba Rosenbaum.
What is going on, Pirate Nation? Welcome into another edition of A Pirate's Life for Me here on the Sports Objective podcast channel. And, you know, this time, a week from now, the Pirates will be in the big house taking on the Michigan Wolverines. But right now, very excited to be joined live from Teach's Hole down on the Outer Banks near Ocracoke, and that is Tom Earnhardt. Tom, we appreciate your time this afternoon.
Hey, Bubba, it's my pleasure.
Yeah, and glad to have you on. We've talked about this for some time, finally making it happen. But, you know, I know you attended Greenville Rose High School. So, you know, just tell us about your childhood, you know, when you became a Pirate fan, and, you know, and how you grew to love ECU.
Well, as you mentioned, Bubba, I grew up in Greenville from age 2 on to graduating from Greenville Rose. Grew up a Pirate fan. My parents used to take me to Ficklin Stadium and then later to Dowdy Ficklin. But we were members of the Porthole Gang, where your folks could take you into the football stadium and drop you off and leave you. And you got to enjoy the football game from a kid's perspective. You got to be there when the team came on, when the team left. On occasion, you got lucky and you got a jersey or a chin strap or a sweatband. And I think I still have all that stuff. I actually have an Eddie Hicks jersey, one of the old Tearaways.
But, nice.
My dad took me to see Terry Bradshaw play the Pirates. I forget what school he went to, but
it was Louisiana Tech. La Tech.
Yeah, I got to see Terry Bradshaw play in Ficklin. I got to see Leon Spinks in Ficklin at a halftime when Leon Spinks had just won the Golden Gloves. I don't think he was heavyweight champion yet, but lots of childhood memories of growing up. You know, in Greenville, you just grow up a Pirate. If you don't, then you need to move on out of Greenville and get out. Probably leave North Carolina altogether if you don't grow up a Pirate.
So you talk about getting that Eddie Hicks jersey. You know, are your earliest memories of East Carolina football from the Pat Dye era or Sonny
Randall?
Yeah,
well, you know, sadly, we lost Pat's son, Brett, just a few weeks ago. I grew up with Brett. We were buddies. We were buddies in grade school and into St. Peter's Catholic school for a number of years. I grew up in the Pat Dye era and used to spend the night at Pat Dye's house.
Yeah, we've had Pat Dye Jr. on the show back a couple years ago. I guess it was not too long after his dad had passed away, and that was an honor, and really enjoyed taking a trip down memory lane with Pat Dye Jr. Of course, he and his dad had come to that 2014 game when the Pirates defeated the North Carolina Tar Heels 70-41 at Dowdy Ficklin Stadium. And that was obviously an excellent evening. You think about those Pat Dye years, you know, here on the podcast, although he hasn't been on in a while, but Terry Gallagher, you know, receiver on those teams that didn't throw the ball a whole lot. But, you know, in addition to Eddie Hicks, you know, what you mentioned some other names, what are some of those memories that you have of that Pat Dye era when the Pirates were winning, games on a consistent basis?
Leander Green jumps out of my head. I just remember watching Leander Green play quarterback and how shifty and fast he was in that that wing tee or wishbone that Dye liked to run. But I'm trying to think. There's so many names, Bubba. They just kind of all fit. They all kind of all fit together.
Yeah, no doubt. But I'm sure you recall back. It's crazy to think that in December it will have been 5 years, but it was right there when Mike Houston was getting hired as East Carolina's head coach. And in December of 2018, we had that 40th anniversary party for the 1978 Independence Bowl champions. Yep. And we had Pat Dye on the phone. Coach Houston showed up to Professor O'Cool's, as it was then, in the Big Lots Shopping Center there in Greenville, and hopped on the phone and had a conversation with Pat Dye. And you know, that was pretty special.
Yeah, I mean, Bubba, as you know, when you grow up with pirate blood pumping through you, all these things, you know, you just get those special times and you bump into people. Heck, on the way out here to the Outer Banks, got one of the ferry attendants walked up to my car window and he said, "What year?" And I was like, "What are you talking about?" And he was looking at my shirt. And I looked up at him and he says, "Have you struck anybody out lately like you did me?" And I looked up at him and I said, "Sonny." And it was a buddy of mine that played back when I was growing up. A lot of kids from Washington would come over to Greenville to play Little League, Prep League, and Babe Ruth just to get more exposure. And, yeah, me and Sonny had grown up knowing each other and went to ECU. He graduated a few years ahead of me, but, yeah, I've known, you bump into pirate friends everywhere you go.
No doubt. So, I mean, Pirate Nation seems to be everywhere. Like you're saying, I was up in Connecticut, New York, Massachusetts this summer. My son Riley and I went up to check out a Yankees game with Matt Semenza, and then also we went to Fenway Park and saw the Red Sox play the A's. But at each venue, at each ballpark, I had someone say, "Hey, go Pirates, ECU," and make multiple comments.
Yeah, if only all those people would get on the phone and fix this conference realignment thing for us.
Yeah. And
seems like we're loved by many, but supported by few.
Yeah, certainly been heavily discussed, and down through the years on conference expansion. You know, it seems like when we've had our excellent seasons, it hasn't been when realignment has been occurring, or you know, it's been just after. You know, you think back to the '91 season; that was like a year or two too late. You had Dave Hart say, "Hey, if this would have happened in '89 or '90, we'd have been in the Big East." And when we got into Conference USA, we had been in the old Liberty Bowl Alliance, which was made up of several of those teams that formed Conference USA. And Conference USA was created, and then East Carolina, you know, didn't get in initially, if I recall correctly. And then when we did get in, it was as a football only member.
Yep.
And then
Bubba, the funny thing is I lived right through Battle Emory, and I were classmates at Rose High School. And, you know, I had every intention of staying home, finishing Rose High School and staying home and going to ECU. And there was a coaching change the summer before my senior year. And Ed Emery was dismissed and Art Baker was hired. And all the plans in the world at that point changed. I ended up at High Point College. Spent a lot of time majoring in fraternity and working at Gold's Gym in High Point for a pirate, Robbie Bryson. And so I spent several years, 5 years in High Point, then trying to figure out a way to get back to East Carolina and get back home to Greenville. and join the Army. And believe it or not, you find Pirate Nation all over in the Army, especially when you're deploying back and forth to the Middle East. You know, I've watched probably 30, 40 pirate games on AFN or on the computer through a satellite connection just so we could see a pirate game.
Yes, certainly wasn't nearly as easy to follow the Pirates back then as it is in today's world with the ESPN Plus coverage and everything streaming. But kind of working in reverse a bit before we talk about your East Carolina years there when it was moving from Ed Emery into Art Baker. And even though you weren't there at the time, I guess you were in High Point and did want to touch on the Ed Emery years, and because there were certainly a few good seasons in there in his five seasons at the helm. But
well, you had Henry Williams and Terry Long.
Yeah,
I mean, when you grow up in Greenville and you grow up a Pirate, you know, I was at Jobby's Gym, the same guy I mentioned earlier that owned the Gold's Gym in High Point. He used to own Jobby's Gym down on Evans Street. And Terry Long would come in for extra workouts in Jobby's, and we all knew him. The football team, and for that matter, even the baseball and basketball team, they were parts of your family. You saw them everywhere.
Right, very close knit is Pirate Nation in the ECU community. And actually where I was going with this is with you attending Greenville Rose, the legendary Ronald Vincent, better known as RV, and has so much success on the diamond, leading that Rose Rampant baseball program. But even though that's not directly East Carolina related, I know back we ran into RV at the basketball game last season, and yep. you of course went and chatted with him during halftime. So you can talk about what it meant to play for such a legend, and you know what RV means to you.
Well, my only regret is that I was not a better baseball player, but some of my fondest memories of growing up in Greenville were spent around RV and around that baseball team. And Saturday practice at Guy Smith Stadium and every afternoon at Guy Smith Stadium. I even remember Battle Emery hitting a line drive up the batting cage right straight back at me, put me in the emergency dental chair, made my lips blow up like Donald Duck. But I took that line drive up right in the face. Simply because it was too windy that day, and we moved the pitching screen out of the way to hold the net, keep the net from blowing in. But it's a pirate community. All of us that grew up there, we remember fondly, going back, going to the stadium. Walking in and seeing each other, and I don't know where I'm going with this, but I think back on those days very, very fondly.
Art Baker's first season was in 85.
That was my graduation year.
Okay, so what are your memories of that 83 season that was so memorable? When the Pirates went 8-3, the three losses, teams ranked in the top five or so at their place, the big three in the state of Florida, and
unfortunately, Bubba, that's the memory that sticks out the most is three games by what I think 10 or 11 points total.
Yeah, it's 47-46 to Florida State in the season opener, and then you had the 12-7. Loss, I believe it was, at Miami, and then 24-17 at the Swamp.
It wasn't. It was a handful of points, and the whole season could have been different. But it was a special season. I mean, I think we won 7 games that year. We were, everywhere we went, people were paying attention.
Yeah, especially Columbia, Missouri. The staff there. That's something we've discussed with Norman Quick and other members of that 83 team that we've had on the show down through the years, and that was how they had the buttons that said "We're in the hell of East Carolina," and then of course Ed Emery went to the press conference following the game and that victory by ECU and Columbia that day and said, "Now, I guess they know now."
Yep. But I'll tell you, what, we got off on a tangent there, Bubba, but RV, number one, very few people know this. RV's an ECU graduate and multiple letter winner at ECU. And he coached high school football at Rose as the head coach until I think the year before my senior year at Rose. But RV is a legend, a good friend of mine. I can pick up my phone and call him anytime, day or night, and he will answer. And the same holds true for everybody that's ever walked through that dugout.
Yeah, and after I said that earlier, I started second-guessing myself. I was like, hang on. I said, I'm pretty sure RV attended East Carolina. But yes, so you see RV at Clark LeClair Stadium, at Dowdy-Ficklin, at Williams Arena, Menchie's Coliseum on a consistent basis. And, he not only is a tremendous coach, but he clearly loves and supports the Pirates.
And he looks after his guys. I mean, once you are one of RV's boys, you are always one of RV's boys.
So during your college years or young adulthood, there after graduation in the mid to late 80s, what is obviously not a whole lot of success was had in the Baker years, but who were some of your the players that maybe really stood out? I know during the Baker years, a guy like a Vincent Smith that was a tremendous linebacker that went on to an excellent NFL career. Go ahead.
I'll tell you over any name. I talked to a bunch of my fraternity brothers at High Point in the driving down to Raleigh to go see the Pirates play NC State at Carter-Ficklin. I said Carter-Ficklin.
I knew what you meant.
Anyway, we all went down to NC State for the ECU NC State game. And lo and behold, we won, and we blew them out pretty. I mean, we beat them pretty good. And I don't think it was a blowout by any stretch, but it was a big ECU win, and we won convincingly there at the end. And then our fan base just went nuts, and we all sat there and just marveled at it. I didn't know what to make of it. I knew when we drove back from Raleigh to High Point that night, I was like, ooh, those NC State folks are going to be mad at us. And it turned out Jim Valvano, who was the athletic director at the time, went very publicly condemned us and said we were putting a moratorium on playing the Pirates all over some bushes. But
yeah,
over some bushes and bad behavior.
Yeah, and what was also well documented is that some of those individuals involved were high school students there from the Raleigh area, and not even East Carolina students.
It's just like any story in the press these days. You got to kind of let it percolate for a while, and then you find out what really happened and what really, but that was a scene that I will never, ever forget.
Yeah, it's certainly one of my earliest memories of Pirate football, and I've talked about it before on the Sports Objective, and just how I was 6 years old, and I remember my dad leaning over and saying, "Hey, be prepared to duck down and cover your head here in a minute, because these state they are going to be throwing bottles and stuff."
Carter Finley was not a fun place to be that night.
But
not fun. I mean, it was fun for us, but it was not fun leaving there. They were upset. They were really mad.
They certainly were. And, you know, moving there into the 91 season, of course, that's been discussed, you know, and rightfully so by Pirate Nation. So many excellent memories from that 11-1 ninth ranked team, but what specifically are your memories of that season?
Well, I was fortunate enough to my mom and dad had always been members of the Pirate Club, but at a very basic level, and my mom found out that you could not get tickets to the Peach Bowl unless you leveled up, and she leveled up so that we could get the Peach Bowl ticket package. And I met them in Atlanta, and we walked. I remember the night before the game, we walked through Omni, I think it's called Omni Plaza. And we were walking through there, and we passed a banner on the wall, and it said the NC State graduate who designed this building welcomes you to the Peach Bowl and to Atlanta. And then you walked another 25, 30 feet, and somebody put another banner up and said, the CEO of this building and owner of this building, who is a Pirate graduate, welcomes you to the Peach Bowl and to Atlanta. And then, you know, what we saw unfold there in the fourth quarter, there in Atlanta was, you know, breathtaking. One of my fondest memories I'll ever have of just complete and utter disbelief, yet joy. Seeing that field goal go to the right, first realizing that they were going to try to tie the game and walk out of there with a tie game, and then that field goal goes right, and the rest is, as they say, history. But what an amazing set of circumstances.
You talk about buildings in Atlanta. I recall going to the Peach Bowl parade, and I guess I was, 10 at the time, and I remember a State fan that was probably 10 floors up or something in one of the hotels right there. He was on a balcony or out of a window, threw a cheeseburger, and it landed right in the middle of the marching Pirates, and because I just remember my dad getting fired up about it.
Yeah, I bet Gary can. I can guess Gary had his mad on about that.
Yeah, and you know, he just leaned over to me. He said, "Man, I want to whip their butts," or something to that effect. Probably censored that a little bit. Throughout the 90s, Pirates, so much success under Coach Steve Logan. Obviously, Jeff Connors for a decade there, who would later have a second stint as strength and conditioning coach. But you developed a relationship. You mentioned your background with the military, and that led you, I believe that's how you initiated that relationship with Jeff Connors and Steve Logan. So tell us what you can. Obviously, certain things you cannot bring to the air, but the things that you can divulge, what can you tell us about some of those special times on Friday nights and game days with Coach Logan and then Jeff Connors and those Pirate teams?
Oh, the legendary pregame meetings. So I joined the military to try to get. Oh, I was literally just joining to try to get college tuition taken care of. And wanted to get back to East Carolina, get back home, and never expected to enjoy the Army. But very quickly, I realized I had a new life and a new career, a second chance, if you will. After a couple of years enlisted, I was a young sergeant, and I was driving for the regimental commander. When he opened a file and he says, "Hey, Earnhardt, you realize you have 131 college credit hours but no degree?" And I said, "Yes, sir, I totally understand that." And he said, "You know, we can fix that and get you, and you can come back into the Army as an officer." And one thing led to another, and they said, "You've been approved, and you can go back. You can go back to school and get your degree." And sat down with the career counselor, and the career counselor said, "So where do you want to go to school?" And I asked him, I said, "Well, I pulled it out of thin air. I said, what about East Carolina?" And he looks in the book, and this is a little bit before computers had taken over our world. He looks in the book and he says, "East Carolina University, there it is right here. They need cadets. So you can go." And I joined the ECROTC program. And we proudly, in 1993, was the first time we went down to Fort Bragg, and we drew some purple smoke out of the ammunition depot, the ammo supply point at Fort Bragg, and we brought it back, and we set off the purple smoke at the games from 93, 94, 95. And through that purple smoke, I met Steve Logan. We had several interesting conversations about the makeup of that smoke, and Steve was convinced it was toxic, but it's really just it's violet signal smoke, and it's probably not good to breathe, especially if you're a player in that old ship, that wooden ship hull. But we had that smoke billowing, and the Pirates ran through it, and they started playing Purple Haze, and that was sort of the way Logan and I met, and we kept in touch and stayed in touch. And in 1996, I was a second lieutenant at Fort Bragg, and it's 96. No. Anyway, kept in touch, and I was introduced to our good friend, the strength coach, Coach Jeff Connors. And Jeff came down and brought some of the players, and we put them through the Nasty Nick at Fort Bragg, the Special Forces obstacle course, and that led to an invitation for us to come up and start taking a role in the night before game meetings, before the players went down for the night. And I would, so Jeff would call, and I would grab a few friends, a few comrades from work, and we would have a theme each week, and we would go up and do the pregame motivational talk for Jeff. And of course, every time we were there doing it, I would look over, to my left at the wall, and there would be Steve Logan crouched down in that Steve Logan crouch, listening to every word you said and just looking at you like, "Don't you get me in trouble." But one night that you've heard about, I brought a good buddy of mine who got the whole room completely silent and started talking about, what it means to trust the guy on your right and the guy on your left. And he got down into the weeds on it for a little while. And while he was telling that story about trusting the guy to your right and the guy to your left and the guy behind you and the guy in front of you, I had gone outside and set off a grenade simulator in the parking lot. And Jeff Connors had opened the door just enough so that, the full effect of that grenade simulator came through the room. Well, it set off every car alarm in the parking lot. But it made the entire football team jump. And yeah, we had a lot of fun doing that. And it you know, that was something that went on and on for a couple of years, Bubba, until about 1999, 2000 is about when that stopped.
Right. A couple things. I mean, going back to the origin of the Purple Haze entrance, that's what I was thinking, that it was right there early on in the Logan years, because I recall, you know, during the...
Yeah, Peach 1993.
Bowl, okay. I recall during the Peach Bowl season, and then even Coach Logan's first season in 92 as head coach, that he was, or that team rather, you know, entered the stadium to the old Gary Glitter's Rock and Roll Part Two and the air raid siren. And then, you know, that song was still played at the stadium, but, you know, the Purple Haze entrance was perfect. And it's funny you brought up the effects of the smoke and you having conversations with Steve Logan about that, because my dad and I and some other fans were jokingly saying, you know, when we get off to slow starts at home, but then end up, you know, playing well later on in the game, that we must have inhaled too much Purple Haze.
Nah, I think the more of that stuff you get in you, the better you play.
But anybody that's been down near the Murphy Center, as it became in, you know, built in 2002, but or prior to that, when you just had an open end zone down there, and when the team would walk over from Ward, and anyone who's been there when the Purple Haze is set off, or you know, just sitting on that side of the stadium where the wind will blow it your direction, you definitely can imagine what it would be like to be down there in the middle of it.
Yeah, I don't have any words for it, but standing there when they used to have a plank that they would drop, a door that would drop on that wooden ship.
Yeah,
and
during
the players would come out, but the noise and the crowd noise and the just the stadium rocking like it does, it just sends chill bumps, you know, just talking about it. And to have had a part in that and to have played a role in that, especially I told you we could pull this call off, I started thinking about it, and I vividly remember one day after practice, I had been over, I don't even remember why I was in Greenville, but I was in Greenville, and I went to practice, and I was watching the game, or watching practice, and after practice, I walked back towards the Ward building, and Steve Logan was sitting on the concrete wall right outside the locker room door. And he and I struck up a conversation, and one of the things he said, Bubba, that stands out to me to this day is he says this what we're doing here is not much different than what the Army's doing with you. And that stuck in my, of course I had to ask questions, and I said, I wanted to know more. And he said, these kids that you're watching walk off this practice field, these are the ones nobody wanted. These are the young men nobody wanted, but we wanted them. And we fed them, we trained them, we coached them, and we've turned them into what we want. And he said, most of these kids, if it weren't for East Carolina, wouldn't have ever had a chance. And I leaned back against the wall and I looked at him and I said, if it weren't for East Carolina, I wouldn't have had a chance. And he said, you see, that's exactly what I meant. And that has stuck with me to this day. I actually thought about it long and hard this morning, remembering that conversation.
Yeah, I've heard Coach Logan when he was on with Jeff Connors on Absolute Empowerment last year. He told a similar story about Lamont Burns and just his development after, you know, just seeing him play at Greensboro Page High School, I believe it was, and adding all that weight to his big frame for someone who was very athletic, and then becoming an NFL offensive tackle. And then you had a guy like Mitchell Galloway, who was very light coming out of Marlboro High School down in South Carolina in Bennettsville. And you know, he developed into what he was. You know, Coach Connors packed on 30 or 40 pounds on the Mitch. And, you know, man, he could run. He was right there with the likes of a Keaton Mitchell from a speed standpoint.
Yeah, that, you know, that was a team that could impose its will. Once Connor's program and Logan had built that program the way they wanted it, you know, if you remember the defense, Jeff Carr, another great friend of mine, Matt Semenza, they were a football team that could impose their will. And they could just decide you're not gonna beat us today.
Yeah, they really were. And you talk about Jeff Carr, so many great Pirate linebackers down through the years. Pernell Griffin.
Oh, Jeff will be listening to this. I expect several phone calls in the very near future.
Intentional name drop. But at the same time, well-deserved and much deserved. But a couple more questions about Pirate football, and then we'll shift over and discuss a couple other topics like Pirate baseball and then also the Pirate Club and fundraising. But as it pertains to Pirate football, you know, do you have – I know I talked about during your childhood, but, you know, all time, you know, who are your top two or three, or maybe even say your Mount Rushmore, your top four favorite ECU football players?
Well, David Garrard would be pretty high up on that list. David Garrard, Jeff Carr. But I have to kind of go back and say the late Eddie Hicks. Eddie Hicks has been a friend of my family for a long time. My daughter met Eddie at her first Pirate football game, and he walked up behind us in the line to go in the game, and he introduced himself to my daughter as she was six, I believe. And over the last several years, she got a jersey a year with Eddie Hicks's name on the back of it, and either Pirates or Vikings, I'm sorry, Pirates or Giants on the front. So Eddie Hicks would be on my Mount Rushmore. He was just give the ball to Eddie Hicks and let him do it. But, yeah, I would say David Garrard, Jeff, primarily Jeff, because, you know, Jeff was one of those guys that it wasn't going to work. It wasn't supposed to pan out, and Jeff made it pan out. Luke Fisher sticks out in my head, but, you know, I'm feeling kind of on the spot. Can you tell?
No, those are responses. Excellent choices, obviously. You know, Luke Fisher. You know, he's been very good to us here on this show. I appreciate him coming on a couple of times, and you know, he's undoubtedly one of my favorite players. I think back to, I guess that 1990 season, had the opportunity to go into the locker room. Ken Burnett, I'd met him down at North Myrtle Beach earlier that summer as a 9-year-old, and he took me in to meet Jeff Blake, and I believe I got to meet Luke, also Tom Scott, and several other guys after that season opener against La Tech.
Since you brought it up, Jeff Blake goes on the Mount Rushmore. He's got to.
Yeah. It's okay. We'll give you two mountains.
How about just give me two? Well, they can have Mount Rushmore. I'll take Teach's Hole.
Yeah, it's hard to narrow it down to four.
My wife and I were just sitting out here at Ocracoke talking about we ought, if you remember the old gravestones that Logan used to put on the practice field every time they would knock off somebody ranked.
Believe they called it Boot Hill or something like that.
Boot Hill, yep, that's exactly what they did. But wouldn't it be fun to go to Teach's Hole off right there in Ocracoke and just get some tombstones and just start putting them up out there. That way, when everybody comes to visit Ocracoke and they roll up and see those tombstones, they're trying to figure out what in the hell it means.
And that's something that through the years, the video intro, very intrigued to see what it will be this year. I've heard it's going to be sort of a tribute to some of the videos from years past. It'll be interesting to see if something like that's incorporated, the videos where you had the pirate ship coming up the Tar River and letting the team off. I think that based on some photos circulating on social media, I think it will be something to that effect. Can't wait to see it. Jared Ozimek and his team, creative team with ECU football, doing an excellent job. Final thing I have for you on the football front is, you talk about attending certain games. You referenced the Peach Bowl, but what's a favorite away trip or two that you remember? What are some of the road games that you've traveled to?
Peach Bowl's at the top of my list. The GalleryFurniture.com Bowl. The Mobile, Alabama. I think it was called the Mobile, Alabama Bowl. Drove from Fort Sill, Oklahoma, to be at that game, and linked up with some friends of mine. Steve Jones was one of them, and Kenny Strickland from Fayetteville was another. And somehow in the midst of that game, I ended up on the field next to Jeff Connors and Terry Tillman. And when I got back up at the end of the game, the gang from Fayetteville that I linked up with there in Mobile was gone. And I walked out of the car, and the car was gone, and I was left in Mobile, Alabama, with no wheels and no cell phone. And some pirates from Roanoke Rapids swooped down and saved me. And well, they gave me a ride, and we went out to eat. We played pool until 2 o'clock in the morning and had a big old time. And turns out we're tailgate neighbors at every ECU game for the past 8-9 years now. So we have enjoyed our Roanoke Rapids connection through that game.
And as far as your tailgate location, and that made me think one more football related question. You're in the Elmhurst area, correct?
Correct.
So, in addition to being a football season ticket holder and Pirate Club member for years, I know you're also a season ticket holder for East Carolina baseball. Such a proud tradition, but it's certainly gone to another level under Cliff Godwin. And I know in the last year or two, you've really adopted the jungle life and been out there with some excellent pirates Ryan Dilladay, Jared Plummer, et cetera.
As you know, Bubba, I sat in the bleachers for the longest time. And then finally, Rick Giles, Ryder's dad, coaxed me into going out to the jungle and diving in for a minute. And I turned around and went back to my chair and told my wife, I said, I'll see you after the game. I'm going back. that jungle family is such a special place, such a special group of people. And, every one of them has a pirate story to share. And the funny thing is now, we keep up with each other year round. We link up during football season. We link up during basketball season, as you know, and we link up right back there in the jungle. It's bitten me so bad that I'm proud to say I'm an owner of my own megaphone that I have painted and decorated myself. And so I take a position right there with the left field megaphones and love it. Love every second of it.
Yeah, right after you purchased that megaphone, didn't you say, was it Brian or Jared or perhaps both that gave you a little good-natured ribbing about, hey.
Jared put me on double secret probation.
Yeah.
Gave me 1 week to return to the jungle with a painted megaphone.
Double secret probation, just like the yep. Delta house in Animal House. But obviously, baseball, so many more games. But what are some of your top memories there? You know, favorite games, favorite players, etc.
Oh boy,
I know I'm putting you on the spot here, but
let me just say that the whole last 6 years, it's a blur. At the same time, and not for the reason you might think it's a blur, but it. You know, they run together. I mean, those boys, very few people know that those boys aren't getting the scholarship money that everybody thinks they're getting. In many cases, their families are only getting a third of their tuition and room and board. And yet they still come from all over the country to play for Cliff Godwin, and they come to play and be a Pirate. And then many of them don't ever leave. They come back. And I think that's, you know, that's why, you know, I am bullish on Omaha. We're going to Omaha. It's just a matter of time. It'll happen. I just hope I'm there for it. But you asked about special trips. I would rank our joint trip to Charlottesville this past year pretty high up there. You know, with the poster boards and the megaphone and the makeshift megaphones.
This is not a megaphone.
We had to write on the side of it, this is not a megaphone, so that we wouldn't get tossed out of the stadium. But that one and life harrowing experience going out to Nashville. My wife and daughter and I took off that year to go to Nashville and see the Super Regional there at Vanderbilt. And that night got involved in a bad collision on I-40, girl hydroplane smashed right into us. And what I thought was pretty amusing was all the ECU fans who were behind that traffic jam that we caused on 40 because of the accident. We're all raising hell saying, we don't know when we're going to get to Nashville because they've got I-40 blocked off. And I'm like, if they only knew it was me. But we managed to rent a car in Statesville and we didn't make the first game, but we made the second game. That was pretty memorable. I wish we could have won if we'd have won one of those games, I'm pretty sure we'd have won the second. We would have won the Super that year. There was no way Vanderbilt was going to beat us, beat us the second time if we won one of them.
Right. Yeah, we just had to. That was my mindset going in, you know, against Leiter and Rocker. You had to find a way to get one of those.
And, you know, I think probably my number one memory right now from the past couple of years was two seasons back. When we were playing Virginia at home in the regional, and I was perched against the fence in left field, and I turned around, and the entire football coaching staff and most of the basketball coaching staff were all standing directly behind me, and got to chat and meet with them and became friends with Mike Houston. And it's that was a pretty special night.
Yeah, I recall seeing those pictures of Coach Houston and his family out there in the jungle. And, you know, his sons were enjoying getting on the megaphone, as was Keaton Mitchell. Hashtag get gone, as he was saying, for a home run. But wanted to touch on Pirate basketball a little bit as well. I know in the last year or two, we attended a couple games together, and just throughout the course of those games and on the drive down, we were talking about the potential for Williams Arena Minchie's Coliseum, and how, you know, if we can just we find a way to put a consistent winner on the court, as we saw back during the CIT run, Pirate Nation will get behind it. And when Minchie's is rocking, it's about as tough as to play, a toughest place to play, excuse me, as anywhere in the country.
Yeah, well, you know, it's been a long time since we could be excited about ECU men's basketball, right? And for that matter, women's basketball. But there's every, in my, just my humble opinion, the future's never been brighter. I, in my mind, I hope and pray that we can turn Williams Arena into something that would rival Cameron Indoor. You know, it's the size, the way the room's set up. East Carolina, and if you just sit there and watch the jungle during a baseball game, there is no reason we can't turn that basketball arena into that same kind of emotional roller coaster for the opponent.
Undoubtedly, I remember several opposing coaches just ready to pull their hair out. Mick Cronin when he was at Cincinnati, and of course now at UCLA. And I remember, obviously, Tom Crean, Rick Pitino, Bob Huggins, even though I don't think we ever beat the Bearcats when Huggins was there, and gave them several scares when they were highly ranked. But, yeah, Minji's can definitely have that effect. And I remember Mac McCarthy, after we did defeat NC State back in 2007-2008 season, when Coach Mac said it was deafening in here.
Well, there's no reason it can't be on a routine basis. All we need is the kids to get excited about it.
Yep.
And our fans. Sorry about the noise.
No problem. Final thing for you, Tom, as we wrap this up. We've discussed this. We've pretty much beat a dead horse over the last few weeks as it pertains to fundraising on the Sports Objective, and just the importance of joining the Pirate Club and giving to Team Boneyard, contributing to the Pirates Unite Capital campaign with the indoor practice facility and the baseball ops building down the left field line at Clark LeClaire. But what would be your message as someone who does contribute to the Pirate Club and is a season ticket holder in multiple sports? What would your message be to folks out there who perhaps have never been a Pirate Club member or were in the past but are not currently on board?
Well, first of all, I would ask them what's wrong with them. But in all seriousness, I think the message is pretty straightforward, Bubba. And that is that, we are all passionate about our school, about being Pirates. And we know that, to be a Pirate and to be a part of a successful program, there's things we're going to have to do, and we're going to have to do it harder and more vociferously than anybody else, because we're not getting the help that the larger institutions and the larger conferences are going to get. It's going to be a scratch and claw event, and everybody that's associated with East Carolina needs to know that. And, it kind of gets back to the old Steve Logan, Jeff Connors thing about, well, we'll take the leftovers, but what we'll do is lock them in the weight room and throw sandwiches under the door until they get big, and then we'll turn them into a football team. But that's the same for every single sport, and they can't do it without us. There's just no way they can do it without us. And, you know, I have my own personal feelings about the NIL and I'm just like everybody else. I hate it. I can't stand that it's gotten to this. I understand what the Supreme Court said, and I understand the point, but it's completely been, it's been installed out of control manner. And we just got, we're pirates. We got to deal with it. I'm sitting here at Teach's Hole, Ocracoke. You have to deal with it. And you have to fight your way through it. And then when they kill you, you swim around the boat 3 times without your head. Bubba, in all seriousness, it's going to take everything we can give and then some. And that's just the way I look at it. And, you know, I think it's incumbent upon us, the ones of us that are, that are enjoying this place and time of the pirate program, recruit some more. Everybody knows a dad or a mom who has sent everybody knows parents who have sent a kid to East Carolina and then come to a couple games while their kid was in school, and they still follow the Pirates. But you could easily tap back into that passion and, get them to join. And once they join and once they start coming, then, it just builds and builds and builds. And the other thing I would remind all the Pirate faithful is IPTE at Clemson used to mean I pay 30 a year. It may have even been I pay 20 a year, but IPTE was.
I believe it actually started off at 10 a year. Anyway, your point's true.
Look at what that has become. I mean, Clemson is a national powerhouse, and they had some advantages we don't have, but. And you and I and Kyle have talked about this till we're blue in the face, and you keep saying beat a dead horse. Well, that we can't let that horse die. That horse might be on life support, but we got to keep beating it because the ability to support these teams and these young men and young women is crucial. And you look at some of the Pirate graduates that have made it. There's no doubt that Miles Berry would never have had the chance that he's got right now. Miles Berry is one of those young men that wasn't going to make it, but because of the Pirate Club and because of East Carolina, he's able to make it, and he's going to be one of those success stories that we all sit back and go, I'm so proud he's a Pirate. But there's a bunch of them, and we could do a whole show just on those kids that their dreams weren't gonna become reality except for the Pirates, and the Pirates turned their life around.
So with the 2023 season beginning a little less than a week from now, up at Michigan, and then you have challenging games against Marshall at home, and then travel to App State. We'll wrap with this. So, what are your thoughts on this 2023 team entering year 5 of Mike Houston?
It starts and ends with the quarterback. I don't want to sound like Steve Logan, but I don't have a horse in the race, but if it's Mason Garcia, then it's Mason Garcia. And, the faster he can get up to speed with the game and the way the game's played, because we all know he's only had a few live snaps in game situations. And, he had the Navy game a couple years ago. But once he gets his rhythm and once he gets everything going, I think we're probably looking at – 7-4, 8-3 this year. I think we're gonna stump our toe, more than once. But you know, who knows? You know, we come out of week one fairly healthy, and maybe we go down there and give Michigan a scare or a terror, and we see where it goes from there. I know I'm sure looking forward to it.
Really appreciate an hour of your time this afternoon. Safe travels to you and your family as you're headed home from Teaches Hole in Ocracoke, there on the Outer Banks. But
I've got you sand. I'm bringing you some sand.
I appreciate that. Look forward to catching up with you for that Marshall home game. And, Pirate Nation, you've been listening to A Pirate's Life for Me here on the Sports Objective. Be sure to follow us on X at the Sports OBJ, on Instagram and TikTok at the Sports Objective. Like and follow us on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel. But for Tom Earnhardt, I'm Bubba Rosenbaum. You've been watching and listening to, again, A Pirate's Life for Me here on the Sports Objective. Have a great one, everyone. And as always, go Pirates.
Watching the Sports Objective, the podcast for pirates.
My heart is purple and gold. I'm a pirate down to my soul, and I don't back down, not at all. Find out when the cannons explode, from the sidelines down to the post. Put it down like not even close, all out to the last whistle blow. From the flags of the soul and crossbones, everybody stand up, get your hands up. Let a team know that we got their back. This is our house, this is our town, our top. Everyone, I copy that. Everybody gonna see it's go bananas. Feed that. Don't hold.